There was a certain point, and I can talk about this during the recording, but there was a certain point where I was just like, people are coming to this training seeking something more than, just like a really good asana system, which that is very valuable, but there were certain questions being asked that I didn't know how to answer. And I just remember there was a moment where I was like, I'm a teacher trainer. I need to know this stuff and I need to study. And so at that point I just, was looking into everything that I could. And to me, the cosmology that made the most sense was what Rudolf Steiner was putting out there. I looked a bunch of different places and everything. There was like a lot of cool stuff, but no one pieced it all together like Steiner did.
Welcome back to the Yoga Teacher Training Podcast. I'm Jeremy Devins, and today I'm joined by Ray Cardenas, founder of Practice Yoga in Austin, Texas, who just celebrated their 10-year anniversary. So grateful to have you here, Ray.
Thanks for having me. And good job with the last name. It's not easy
Yeah, I
to
had to
pronounce it.
practice. I've actually never known. We were talking about that before I hit record. I've never actually said the name. I just called it always Ray. But I've watched, I finished my teacher training in 2011, 2012. I started teaching a lot, and then you started practice yoga, I guess, 2013. So I was always hearing about it, and like it always had a really good reputation and like really good vibe. And a lot of the great teachers in Austin, Texas went there. And for listeners, Ray is one of the rare people born in Austin and still living there and just outside of the town. But practice was a really cool vibe and like a special place. And I feel like it still is. And whenever people go to Austin, they always ask, like, what yoga studio should I check out? Practice is always the one I recommend people to. So I'd love to hear like anything you want to share about your experience of like creating a yoga studio for our listeners. Some of our listeners might be like thinking about that or maybe thinking differently about it after the pandemic. So kind of your journey with that.
Yeah, it was kind of a whirlwind. I was teaching yoga at another studio in town that was really, really popular, and some upheaval took place, a lot of changes in the business model, and it ended up displacing a lot of teachers. And I held on to my teaching position there for as long as I could. And I was in this 80-hour Anusara immersion with Struan Vaz, who is a partner with me in the studio. And with our teachers at that time, we basically made the commitment. We were like, okay, it's not working out here where we're at. And we need to do something. Prior to teaching yoga, like when I was teaching at this other spot, I could just say it when I was teaching at Black Swan. There was and it's under new ownership now. It's not really a big deal. But that was like a transitionary period in my life. Prior to that, I was an online poker player, and I was pretty darn successful in that world until I wasn't. And so pretty much, found myself in a state of limbo for about 2 years where I was only teaching yoga, and that was pretty much my only source of income. And I had a child and a mortgage, and so I had to get some help from my folks during that time. And I dropped out of college. Prior to that, I was delivering pizza, so I didn't have a lot of work history. I didn't have a lot of skills. I became a professional poker player in my mid-20s, and so it was pretty much all I knew how to do was that and yoga. And so I really didn't have a choice. I feel like the whole circumstance was happening to me and happening for me, because things just started to happen and unfold in a way where it was like, okay, wow, okay, we're going to do this yoga studio. I'm going to go look in this area of town. The first area I looked, I parked over by what used to be Tacoba, and I had my bike and my pickup truck. So I hopped on my bike, rode over. I was like, it would be cool to have a spot by Cheer Up Charlie's, because that was like the coolest bar spot on E6. And I was like riding my bike over there, and I was thinking, like, what am I doing? Why am I even looking over here? This is like such a popular neighborhood. There's not going to be anything available. And lo and behold, directly across the street from Cheer Up Charlie's, I'm riding up. I see like a sign in the window, what looks like a vacant building. And it was open. So I called the note. I looked inside. There's a big open room. I was like, wow. Yeah, that's one example of just something serendipitous happening regarding opening the studio. Another cool aspect was Struan's very good with numbers. He's an engineer, and so he laid out, the quantitative aspect of the business, and I couldn't have done that on my own. And so it really was a team effort. So if you're thinking of opening a studio, I highly recommend partnering up with someone who has a skill set that you don't have. And I was sort of like the face and the promotion of the studio, and Struan was like the back end, crunching the numbers and, making sure we could make it work. And at that time, Black Swan was on the cutting edge of like social media marketing, and a big part of the business model was teachers establish a direct connection with their students. And so we knew that with all these teachers who were no longer teaching there, they had a student pool that they could speak to directly. And so we were able to literally write down all the names of people that we knew were going to come into the door when we opened practice. So we weren't worried about getting our first customers or anything like that. And we just made a splash when we were opening, made a video, had a party, and the rest is history. I don't know if it's that easy. It seems like it seems like it was sort of like a fairy tale circumstance, but yeah, we were like breaking even after 4 months, which I know like is kind of unheard of for a lot of businesses. And yeah, it's been great. The ethos of the studio is like, because we were all kind of butthurt because we were like, hey, yoga teachers, we're being disrespected, and we're going to open a studio that respects teachers, and we're going to prioritize and cater to good teachers and make them feel welcome and give them the ability to succeed. And so that was kind of the guiding light of the studio. And we're like, you got good teachers, accessible structure. It's a donation-based thing. Anyone can come whenever, pay whatever. And everything else will fall into place. And so thankfully that happened. We're 10 years in, and it's going well. We have a reputation as being like the place where teachers go to practice, and also we've got our senior teachers there that are teacher trainers. So it's part yoga studio and it's part yoga school.
Yeah. And that decision to do donation based, I guess it made sense financially. It seems like kind of risky though, right? Probably there's a lot of thought put into that.
Yeah, but also there was the familiarity aspect, because Black Swan was donation based, and there's kind of this sentiment that the value of the accessibility that the donation based model conveys, we figured that was going to carry us through. And yeah, but it is risky, and there are certain things like you have your suggested donation, and now especially with all the automated payment systems, you can prompt people to donate a suggested amount through the buttons on the payment interface. So,
Yes.
that those little things help. But also it's like, hey, we got the room, we're not going to turn you away. So, and the process is anonymous, so we're not
Right.
really judging.
Yeah. And you still do you do all the memes for the practice Instagram?
I do, yeah. Sometimes they get me in trouble, but I've been doing all I've been doing the memes for that, and I can't, like, I don't know. I was looking at one day, that's another thing. It's just like I'm looking at some of the meme templates and I'm like, I could do this. And I started to, put some words on some images, and some, like, the first one of the first ones I did was, there's that picture of Jimmy Fallon and he's at a basketball game and he's kind of like looking off to the side because there's a the back of a cheerleader, like, with her, just, I don't know. And open posture to him, and he's looking away. And then so I wrote, like, the yoga teacher, that's Jimmy Fallon, and the student, the cheerleader, that's the student in Happy Baby. And it's just like, hey, don't make eye contact during Happy Baby, so that was one of the first ones I made. And yeah, it's been fun. I sort of It's interesting because when you make content that's popular on social media, it has like an addictive effect where you want to do more and more because you're getting all that positive attention. And I saw that happening to me, and I was like, I don't want to just be a meme account or a meme maker. So I consciously stepped back for a while because it was like I was doing it too much, and now I just sprinkle them in every once in a while. So I got a more healthy relationship with memeing.
Yeah, the page is pretty well balanced. I just saw today a post from Jen talking about like her first experience with Ayurveda, and it's like really grounded and like, ah, oh, it's great to hear that story. But then you got the Iyengar Trump face meme next to it. It's like
Yeah,
good balance.
exactly. Definitely try to, I try to, hold the center. I get too polarized, and yeah, I'm all about like holding the opposites and using that tension to create like a third thing, a new thing, to progress things forward.
Yeah. And before I hit record, you were talking about like your desire to like go deeper into the yoga philosophy and then bring that into the teacher training and then ending up finding Steiner's work, which is part of why I initially reached out for the podcast, is just because I don't know anything about Steiner's stuff and I've seen your post about it a lot. And I thought maybe there's some bridge here because I don't really know many other yoga teachers talking about it or into it. And when I try to get into it, it seems a little like thick and dense. And I'm like, what's a good entry point? So maybe I get Ray to talk about it for a while and maybe some other yogis would be interested in it too. So I'm curious kind of that journey of like bringing that philosophy in and maybe that ties in with what you were just saying too.
Yeah, well, something that happened to me in this whole process was, I've confronted some deeply rooted aspects of my personality that are, I use the right word, but I guess you could say like selfish, or like I had a like. Basically, I was following these two teachers, and the messaging behind what they were saying was that, you're God, and it's all one, and well, it's all one, and also it's all multiplicity, and so basically, like, nothing really matters and everything works out in the end. So essentially, you can do whatever you want. And there was some aspect of my personality that was like, awesome. That's what I've always wanted to do, whatever I want. And so and the way that you, this is my understanding of what they were putting forth, and maybe I missed something, which I can say, like, sure, the onus is on me. But their teaching was like, the way that you understand like what you truly want and where the wisdom's at basically is in your body. And so go into your body and don't try to suppress your instincts and let them play themselves out in the fullest way possible. So it's kind of a one-sided view, because that we have our instincts and our will impulses, but we also have our feelings and our thoughts. The other thing that contributed to some of the missteps I had early on, which is what led me to seeking out something that was grounded in morality, which is what Steiner stuff is grounded in. It's like, it's not an amoral, it's not a morally relative universe. It's a moral cosmos that fits together in a certain way, and there's certain laws that govern where we are. And so, but one of the things that caused me to go down the path that I went was a materialistic outlook that basically said, the spirit world is incomprehensible. I'm not even going to focus on it. I'm just going to focus on what my senses convey to me. I can't know that stuff. And therefore, I'm going to disregard it, and I'm going to limit my thinking faculty in that way. And so I didn't really like, and there's also this underlying message in a lot of yoga teaching that says, like, get out of your mind, get out of your head, you know? And I think that's an incomplete teaching, because like, maybe if you're like caught up in some negative thought pattern that is, you know, hurting you, then yeah, you want to be able to get out of your head, get into your breath, get into your body. That's great. But that doesn't mean abandon your thinking completely. Give yourself some space from it, and you know, figure out how to think better, how to work with the realm of the head in a better way. And so I was doing all will impulses. I was even calling what I was doing conscious indulgence, and it was like, hey, what my body wants to do, this is how I'm free. I'm going to listen to my will impulses, and that will make me free. And then so after I would do like an intense yoga practice, well, then I would go to lunch, and my instincts would say like, well, have a beer. you're free. You work for yourself, you know? And so I would have a drink and maybe have another, you know, and all of a sudden, like because here's another thing that I learned throughout this process is like the lower impulses associated with safety, security, affection and esteem, and power and control, those will compel you. And so those actually, you know, you think that you are, because you're going against the culture that kind of imposes certain things that keeps those in check. And so you feel like it's the culture that's the bigger imposition on you. At least I did. And so I started, you know, just disregarding that and doing what I wanted to do. And all of a sudden, you know, what I thought was liberating me, I'm now in servitude to, and it's affecting my perceptions and my associations and all of that. And so I basically, you know, became dominated. I was like a pleasure seeker, and you can only do that for so long, and that drains your energy. And you know, the true wisdom in my physical body, which wasn't like the instincts towards the lower level passions, was that like my body basically shut down on me. It was like, stop doing this to me. And I had no energy. I was in pain. I was like mentally, morally bankrupt. And my body was like, dude, you got to stop this. And it basically made me stop. And so I was like, okay, I clearly was wrong, clearly effed up, and I need to figure out like a better way. And also, I was, you know, teaching others, and basically early on, I was teaching strictly just the asana system that I knew and loved, which was an evolution of the Anusara system, which changed my life for the better, got me really into my body. But I didn't have the proper cosmology to frame it in, but now I do. So I still use the same asana system, but I will tell you this, I don't like try to get like super deep in poses or anything like that. Like I used to be really into just like having like sublime looking poses and getting these deep expressions, and that was like an indicator of like being at a high level because I could make my body do these things, and that's not a priority for me anymore. I like to be strong, and I like to dabble and occasionally, hop into those postures, but I'm not trying to like hold them for a long time or even get the deepest expression of them that I've ever done. But yeah, so basically one of the things that I had to reconcile within myself was my disdain for Western religion. And anything that oppressed me, I rebelled against it early on. And once I realized, like, hey, I'm doing it wrong, I was like, you need to go back and look at these things from a different vantage point. And instead of writing them off because you don't understand them, try to understand what's valuable about them. And luckily for me, my parents had taken me to this church when I was younger called the Church of Conscious Harmony, and it's a contemplative Christian community. And the minister there, he almost converted to Hinduism. He was like friends with also the Dalai Lama, and he was very into like Eastern spirituality and harmonizing that with Christianity. And even those Eastern teachers that he was friends with, they were like, you need to stay in the Christian system. That's your system. And clothe these universal teachings in that language. And so luckily I had that place as a home, because when I was a kid, it was always a very welcoming place. But once I was around in fifth grade, I was like, I can't do this anymore. And my parents let me stop going. But so I went back there and I found a book called Meditations on the Tarot. And it's Meditations on the Tarot, Journey into Christian Hermeticism. It was written by this guy named Valentin Tomberg. And in it, he really focuses, especially in the magician chapter, on the three soul faculties, thinking, feeling, and willing, and making those into a unity. And he says that that's when you're in the yogic state, those three soul faculties are harmonized. And he even cites Yoga Sutra 1.2 in the first chapter. He cites the eight limbs of yoga, and he just talks about how like this is a system for bringing yourself into the unified state, and you have to get your will impulses, which is what tends to be like the thing that we're least in control of. You have to bring those in harmony with your you have to work on that through, well, he said that he says through like devotion to God in parts of it, but you can also do it through thinking, and then your thinking affects your feelings, and then your feelings affect your will impulses. And so Rudolf Steiner was that guy's teacher,
Wow.
and he left that guy had he left Anthroposophy, which is Rudolf Steiner's system, and he went back to the Catholic Church. And so, but for me, I'm like, reading that book, it didn't inspire me to like join the Catholic Church or anything, but it inspired me to look deeper into Rudolf Steiner. And so I look into Rudolf Steiner, and I'm just like blown away. I find the Rudolf Steiner Press audio YouTube channel, and it's just thousands of lectures that he gave over the course of his lifetime. And he gave something like over 6,000 lectures. I mean, he has 6,000 published works. A lot of them are transcribed lectures, and his cosmology is just second to none. It One of the things that he focuses on is the mysteries of time. And so a lot of spiritual traditions say like disregard time, just become present and be in the here and now. And that's a good tool to have, but in terms of like orienting yourself in the world, just being present is it that can be disorienting, and so and even like stuff with astrology, like there's a spatial relationship to time, and there's different forces that act upon you. And so to understand the mysteries of time, you can know where you came from, and then you can kind of know where you are, and then you can know where you're going. And so that's what I love about Steiner. And one of the gripes about Steiner is that he characterizes the nature of certain group souls like di different national group souls, different groups of people, says that this is like a signature of the group soul that governs an aspect of the of groups of people. And even there's a time soul too, that's like for a certain time period, this archangel is informing people's unconscious, and has this certain flavor to it. But he also talks about how we're in an age where our individuality is able to pull itself out of those group soul tendencies, which were more pronounced in the past. And he says, and that's how it should be. And so these like distinctions that we make based on group identity are not super relevant. And what should be focused on is the evolution of your individuality. And the whole mission that he puts forth for humanity is to become beings of freedom and love. And he articulates those as these two polarities, where freedom is like individuality and love is unity, the thing that connects us. And so how do we harmonize those two opposites within ourselves? And that's what all his teaching is all about, like the journey of that is happening. That's what we're experiencing across many lifetimes. And then his mission, he said why he incarnated, his mission for that Rudolf Steiner incarnation was to bring back an understanding of reincarnation and karma. He said we needed to relearn those because we're on the spiritual arc of humanity now. The materializing arc, which he calls the Mars impulse, spirit descending into matter, has finished, and we've begun to bounce back up to being able to re-engage with the spiritual world. This fall, there's a purpose for it coming into matter to really understand it, and the scientific method is like the fruit of that impulse, but it's not the only thing. And so he says, now that we have this understanding, we've got to remember where we came from. And so it just makes a lot of sense to me. And it's hard to encapsulate in one short podcast, but that's part of the reason why I take little bits of his lectures and I put images to them and captions, because I want to get people, and it's people seem to really be liking them. My follower account went from like on IG went from like 2,300, now it's up to almost 12,000 in the past like 6 weeks. And so so people are into it from all over the world too. It's super cool to see people following me from Turkey and from South Africa and from all over the place. So it's nice.
That's awesome. That's really good. There's a lot of concepts in there that are succinct and like clear. Okay, I see. Now I see the threads of like how this weaves with yoga and like where it might evolve from yoga philosophy or a different perspective on things that we talk about in yoga philosophy. Is there like a specific way you might weave into like your current teachings? Because I haven't practiced with you as a teacher in a while, so.
Absolutely. So one of the foundational things is you have to be able to pay attention, right? You have to be able to concentrate effortlessly. Like there's two different types of concentration. There's one where you're like compelled, where your will is compelled to focus on something and you can't control it. Let's say like people who suffer from porn addiction, maybe they're compelled to focus on that. And then the other type of concentration is out of your own free choice. You can sit and clear your mind, and you can either like be in silence and focus on, the vast nothingness, and maybe that's and that would be like receptive meditation. So that's my personal practice, and the practice that I teach, because I have a meditation Discord group, and we're doing a 6 month thing where we're doing Steiner meditations. And so basically, you start by you sit and you connect to your breath first. And when you inhale, you focus on your skin and you hold the inhale in with your attention on your skin. And this is like This is associated with an older type of consciousness that in Steiner systems is called moon consciousness, in which it's less individualized. You've got the energy from your environment all around you has come inside of you, and so you're kind of merged with that which was previously all around you, and that's it. That's an older form. And then when you exhale, you put your attention on your heart. And you breathe out and you hold the breath out with your attention on your heart. And this, when someone gets really scared and they turn pale, what tends to happen is there's a sharp exhale and they hold their breath out. And what that does is their blood goes into their heart because that's the instrument of your ego. So your ego is afraid, goes home to the heart. And that's why you turn pale because the blood leaves your periphery.
Wow.
And Steiner says that it's really important to be able to kind of send your blood home to the heart without the feeling of fear. And so you hanging out in the retained exhalation without fear is part of this breathing practice. And he basically, not to be a downer or anything, but he says, like, in the future, in a future incarnation, you're going to need this. And so by doing this practice now, you're going to be able to face like really terrible evil and not be overwhelmed by it by doing this breathing practice. And so any and that's the Jupiter consciousness. So I do that breath practice, inhaling to the skin, exhaling to the heart, and the effect of that is that it's a four-part breath, box breathing, and it calms the mind. And you do receptive meditation. Where you just clear, you just notice what's coming across the field of awareness, non-identification with what you find there, and then abiding from that attention, then we go into some form of active meditation where there's like you consciously visualize something. And so right now what we're doing is, and this is a meditation actually from Daskalos, who's a hermetic esoteric Christian teacher from Cyprus. And basically you visualize a golden sphere around your head. And this is like this the sphere is considered to be, I learned this from Dr. Robert Gilbert, by the way, over at Vesica Institute. I want to give him a shout out. But the sphere in sacred geometry is considered to be the perfect shape because the center is equidistant from all the points on the periphery. So it's sort of like the shape of equality, and the realm in which we're all equal is the realm of spirit. And so it's a spiritual shape. And so when you hold the golden sphere around your head, you are having a beneficial impact on your thinking, almost spiritualizing the soul faculty of thinking. And then you hold a peach blossom or a light pink sphere around your heart. And this symbolizes kind of the passion in the blood being shined a light upon and being kind of purified a bit and lightened up. And so pink sphere around the heart, and then a sky blue sphere around the hips and the lower abdomen. And that has a cooling effect on the most fiery part of your being, the digestive fire. That sort of thing. So you hold those three spheres around you, and then you observe the effect that they have, and it's a calming effect, and it's inviting certain beneficial influences in. And so that's the type of stuff I'm into, is I like imaginative meditation, and it's the higher limbs of yoga, and I also just do really love the asana because I noticed that when I sit and meditate, even in the morning, especially if I haven't been like watching what I'm eating or watching what I'm, because all this stuff has an effect on your mind, right? Anything you take in, food, impressions from your phone or from even just the world around you, has an effect. And so, but I noticed that after I do asana, my mind is calm, almost regardless of any of that. Whereas even if I just wake up and meditate in the morning, I could be, influenced by, what I've been taking in. And so I have an appreciation for asana, but and I have a long history of like working deeply with it, and I love sharing that knowledge in teacher training. And then I also love, the meditation realm. So
Beautiful.
yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like you've really integrated all this into what you're doing and brought in a lot of different perspectives and really powerful stuff. Really cool.
And I think too, it's pretty common, and because I did this too, to like shit on Western civilization and Western spirituality,
Right.
and it just, but I'm a member of Western civilization, like, but this is what I was born into. My soul incarnated into this circumstance, into this place. I didn't incarnate in India. I didn't incarnate, in Russia, or, so it's like you gotta, like, at a certain point, and it took me till I was 35, by the way. And there's also this thing about like different stages of life. Like you're building up your different bodies at these different stages, and Steiner categorizes them as 7-year periods. And it wasn't until after the fifth 7-year period of my life was I able to even open up to the spiritual realm, and specifically Western spirituality. But I think it's not antithetical to Eastern spirituality. They are connected, and they fit together. And I always say that I like to understand and focus on the golden thread of truth that weaves itself through all spiritual teachings. And for me, no one else has communicated that more clearly than Rudolf Steiner. And also, he does it through like he awakened certain, he likens it to like the analogy is, well, if a fish wants to become a bird, then it has to develop lungs instead of gills. And so if you want to perceive the spiritual realm like people intuitively did way back in the day, because people in prior ages, you can just tell, like, people used to only make music for God. And one of the things that differentiates us from ancient people is ancient people believed the images and stories that arose in their mind to be more real than the physical realm. And you especially see that in ancient India, where they characterize the earth as Maya, as a veil over the true world, which is the spiritual world, which reveals itself in astral perception, in dreams and in daydreams. And so dreams are the source of myths, and the meaning behind myths is what underlies the civilizations that we live in. Like that inspiration from those stories built our civilizations. And so I want to understand those on a deep level. And so a lot of Steiner's teaching is, well, how do you awaken those organs of supersensible perception? And these organs are the chakras. He says, first do the Ajna chakra, and you do that through study. And then he says, you got to awaken the throat chakra. And one of his teachings is that, you look at the number of petals on the chakras, and you've got the 16-petaled lotus in the throat. He says half of those petals are awakened and alive automatically, and you need to awaken the other 8 petals. And so he says systems like the 8 limbs of yoga awaken the other 8 petals of the throat chakra. So it's not like an arbitrary number, that number 8, and like
Wow.
the eightfold path in Buddhism, And then he has these 6 essential exercises, the meditation exercises that awaken the dormant 6 petals in the heart chakra, and then you work on the lower stuff from there. So
Are there sort of like lineage holders of people who are teaching like embodiment practices through this teachings of Steiner, or is it just you out there?
No, there are, and he, I, honest, he made up his own embodiment system, and it's a system of dance. It's called Eurythmy, and it's essentially like you embody like the celestial bodies with certain movements and certain like letters there's a movement associated with the letter A, and so you move in a certain way that has the quality of the letter A. So it's a really deep system, and I'm not super versed in it, and I
Yeah.
want to be, but I'm just tackling so much. He did so much, and but I do have some teachers from that lineage, like I mentioned, Robert Gilbert, and my main mentor is John Barnwell, and he's such a just humble, awesome teacher. I'm so grateful for him. Because and then there's Douglas Gabriel and a few others, but like basically Steiner's work is so vast. I was in just, whatever video that Rudolf Steiner Press Audio YouTube channel published, that would be the next thing I learned and listened to, and I would just go in that order, and the order is pretty random. So these guys helped me to say, focus on these concepts, and now focus on these concepts, and now go here, and now go here. And but the whole thing is like his key work is called The Philosophy of Freedom. He was asked, what will be remembered of you in 1,000 years? And he said, only the philosophy of freedom, which I don't know if that, I don't think that's true. I think more will be remembered, but because we're 100 years past when he was teaching, right around now. And but basically the fundamental thesis of the philosophy of freedom is that human beings are free if they're able to think their own thoughts. That's the key, because he says the thought realm is what is uniquely human. We think in a different, like animals don't have that, and plants don't have that. Like animals feel like us, but they don't think like us. So if you want to understand human freedom, you have to look to the realm of thought. And that ties into yoga too, because what are the higher limbs of yoga all about? That's the meditative aspect and the ability to concentrate and to think properly. And so just the thought, if you take anything away from this podcast, the thought realm is a very important, and the ability to think in pictures that you understand the meaning of. So you attach certain concepts to pictures, not arbitrarily, but there's concepts embedded in pictures and stories. And if you're able, and you find yourself in a situation, like I'll give you an example. Sometimes I'll be sitting in meditation, and some of the gnarliest thoughts will come into my mind that are like super dark. And so what I associate that with is the temptations in the desert when Christ is being tempted by Lucifer, and in Steiner's version of the story, the Steiner is not like the devil tempting Christ isn't just one entity, but it's these two polarities. And we don't have to get into that now, but basically I think of myself when I'm meditating, being present, I'm like in a desert, like I'm trying to kind of be in a nothingness. And then this entity comes in the form of like a thought form and tries to take me into this other place. And that's when I get identified with a thought, especially if it's like a dark one, you know? And then so when that happens to me and I see that happen, I'm not just like, oh, well, I'm gonna go with that thought. I'm like, oh, this being that is associated with this type of thought is trying to pull me towards him, and I'm going to not go with that temptation, and I'm going to come back and be centered. And so that's an example of like an image picture, a story that I can access in my mind that guides my behavior in meditation and in daily life. And so it's a guidepost for my being and the actions that I take, and so
Yeah, that's awesome. There's a lot of precedent of that, like in the Buddha story of being tempted and is trying to reach enlightenment and all these,
arrows.
yeah. And then like the sirens, in the Greek mythology, trying to tempt the men from their boats. There's a lot of that precedent, I think, and I think it speaks to so much of what is human and like how our minds can be pulled and distracted or seduced or material
Absolutely.
things, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the
Definitely.
other thing too that I love about Steiner is that he's revivifying even like the old pagan traditions, and he says like, hey, this is what this was about, and this isn't wrong, and this isn't antithetical to Christianity. He says like, basically it's all one religion, whatever you want to name it, you know, and but they it all looks different because human consciousness evolves over time, and in different places on Earth it looks different, you know.
Yeah. Awesome stuff, man. I really appreciate you sharing all this with us. It's really something I've been wanting to learn more about myself. So I feel like I have a better overview and like sort of context. So I know you're running teacher trainings at practice pretty regularly and you're probably weaving this in there. So like curious how you weave it into the teacher training, like how teachers might apply it in their teaching and like when the next practice training is coming up.
Yeah, so I'm one of the things that I take care to do is to say, like, I'm going to give you a lot of information in training, and you should take what's useful for you right now and leave what isn't. So I'm never going to try to get someone to believe something. What I'll do is I'll invite them to suspend disbelief and to just earnestly work with the material and see if it has a beneficial effect. And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, leave it. So basically, I run the weekend track trainings at practice, and it's 9 weekends. And the final weekend is like a, you know, a group teach graduation ceremony. But the other 8 weekends, we will do some sort of physical practice. We do some sort of breathing practice. And we do some sort of meditative practice in each of those weekends. And so it's pretty well-rounded experience. And given that it is the 200-hour teacher training, it is there's a heavier emphasis on asana and how to teach asana. That's the other thing. A lot of practice teaching because my understanding of like teaching a yoga class is not super hard if you have the right concepts and you know techniques, but what is hard is making yourself practice those things. And so the teacher training is like a container to implement the concepts in a group setting so that you know get the reps in, are able to get the words out, and able to teach a yoga class after the training. So that's an important aspect too, but it's a well-rounded program. I think I've done like 13 or 14, and the next one starts in a little under 2 weeks. So I don't know if this will be out by then, but yeah, we're about to jump into the fall weekend track, and then we got another one in spring. So it's fall, spring, fall, spring.
Awesome. Cool. So practice, what's the website again?
PracticeYogaAustin.com.
It's all in person, right?
Yeah, it's all in person. There's some supplemental videos that you get to watch too. So if you miss, you won't miss any of the conceptual stuff because that's all in the videos. Because some people are like, oh, I can't make this day, but it's like it's all good. You'll get the content, but you know, and then the we review the content in a succinct way in the in-person sessions, and then implement that stuff and do the work. So practice.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here today, Ray. And also the Instagram. What's the practice Instagram?
At Practice Yoga Austin on IG and at Raise Awareness. So that's REYS underscore awareness is my personal one where I post the Steiner clips and other helpful tips. So
A brilliant username.
thank you. It just came to me one day and I'm like, hey, this is good.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for being here today and look forward to talking again sometime in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jeremy.